What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Ryan Floyd. Ryan is a CFA. He is the founder and portfolio manager with Barca Capital. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started with Two Truths and a Lie. Then we moved on to conversations about investing in international companies, the realities of doing that, and also the reality that there are over 100 different stock exchanges that are out there, and a lot of them are secure and audited places to be investing money. But how do you do the research? How do you become comfortable doing that? And what about the next time you are traveling abroad, getting involved, even if it's just with a small amount of money, and investing with some professionals that are in those markets? And in so doing, number one, is developing a pretty cool portfolio, but also learning an immense amount about how the process works, not only here in the United States, but in different countries all over the world. And then, of course, we close with a dynamite difference-making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Ryan, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Right. Two truths and a lie. All right. The first one is I play classical piano like Chopin and Beethoven as a hobby.
Okay. Excellent.
Number two is in high school, I was in the school marching band playing the bass drum. Number three is also in high school, I was in the regional marching band playing tuba, which my dad didn't like and said that it was the Hitler Youth.
These are amazing. They're all
pretty
music.
Specific.
Yeah. You were playing the tuba in the regional marching band and your dad referred to that as like Hitler. Wow. Jeez.
Yeah. He thought it was very kind of mechanical and too marching oriented. He was sort of, free spirit.
Okay. Got it. All right. So some additional detail on that. Classical piano, bass drum, and then the tuba. I'm going to guess that you don't play classical piano for fun.
That is wrong. I do play classical piano for fun. It's a great joy. It's been a lifelong hobby and I love it.
Well, I am envious because piano is one of the things that I would love to be able to do, but there's no way I'm ever going to put anything towards it. So congratulations there. Which
well,
one was
the lie?
Well,
very humbling. The lie was the tuba part. So here's the thing. I was describing my friend. I won't mention his name, but it's a lie because it's about me, but it is true about him. He grew up playing in a regional marching band and his dad hated it. His dad was a professor and just thought it was so strict and called it the Hitler Youth. And it's a story that I love, but it doesn't apply to me.
It is a great story. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, and do you still play drums, bass drum?
I don't play the bass drum. I haven't since high school. I mean, this is just I was in the percussion department of my high school band and I don't miss that, but I thought it would be super specific that you might have trouble telling what was a lie and what was truth.
Well,
but
you
I
were...
do play the piano every week and it's a delight. It's very nice.
Yeah, I think that's great. And you were correct. Wonderful job. You got me.
How but often do you get these right? One out of three? Or?
I would think, yeah, I probably am probably a Hall of Fame baseball player, probably 300%. So
okay. So it's just pure odds, I guess, if it's...
Well, we could dig into it and try to assess whether or not I'm actually good at it, or that's probably just, I'm just guess right one out of three times. So...
Okay.
Well, what's
that
top?
It's good stuff.
It's a good way to get our conversation started, Ryan.
Sure, sure.
What's top of mind for you right now?
So I manage an international investment advisor, an investment business, and we look for investments outside the United States. And I like to do this with some historical approach, thinking about today with some longer perspective. I've been doing it for over 15 years, but even that's not that long. It seems like a long time, but in the history of the world, it's not that long. And I think what's top of mind is that these days things feel very, very new and totally wild and maybe outside of all historical norms, whether this country's doing this and this war's happening here or there. And so what's top of mind, or maybe my kind of somewhat hot take, is that it's really not that new. Whatever's happening here or there fits historical norms, and I wouldn't say trends, it's not like predictable, but fits in line with what you would expect, generally speaking, understanding the way countries operate and different political systems work. So I've been thinking quite a bit about this, and yeah, I've had people kind of say, oh my gosh, we don't really have any way to make sense of this or this, and I don't really feel that way. It's more like, oh yeah, here or there, this, I don't know, fits in the way this country's operated for a long time, or in the past, or longer history.
And I imagine that that's beneficial professionally, but it also probably beneficial from a mental health perspective, where you're not trying to look at a data set or a piece of information and make total sense of it because we can't.
You could say that, yeah. So it is good from a mental health perspective, where headlines seem kind of scary and maybe terrifying and very new, like the world, this world is totally different, and that is crazy. To give an example, so Twitter seems like a brand new thing where there's all of this information, or X, and it's coming at you so quickly, and all of this new information is available, and it wasn't before. But actually, in the beginning of the 20th century, the arrival of morning, afternoon, and evening newspapers, a lot of people got two or three newspapers a day. It was pretty similar. And the criticisms of those newspapers felt very similar to the criticisms of X or Twitter or LinkedIn or something like this. So it's not that these things aren't real. Of course, you know, being addicted to this or that social media platform doesn't seem great, but it's not that new. You know, people have had issues, and 24/7 cable TV had some similar feeling. So I guess, yeah, having this kind of a perspective helps me, I don't know, put things into context. But inevitably, if you're managing investments outside of the United States, there's always something going on. So there's always something, oh man, what's this? You know, I have to dig in to make sense of this. So, and that's okay. That makes life interesting for me.
Yeah, appreciate that. You know, we are pattern-seeking creatures. We want to understand things. And if I'm uneducated and I don't know that a tsunami is coming my way, then it's probably going to kill me. Not that this would be very slow-moving, but and the reality that surprise is a very powerful thing. So marketers have figured that out, and they seek to
Sure,
surprise us
sure,
with
sure.
headlines and that. Ah. It
Yeah.
strikes me that none of this is necessarily beneficial to investing, if I can somehow weave that all together.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't know. Headlines often, things are priced in. It's hard to figure out whether this dynamic happening in this or that place is so brand new and kind of awesome or terrifying, but having some detachment or broader perspective helps a lot. And I don't know, it doesn't make for fun cocktail party discussion, I'd say, when everyone seems very nervous about this issue of the day, to say, you know, it's not that different from this other time 100 years ago or something like that. People kind of say, well, that's nothing like now. Well, you know, it is kind of similar. No one likes hearing that. It's much more fun to say, oh my gosh, yes, indeed. Like, this is all so terrifying and horrible. And I don't know. Maybe it's not.
The
I don't think
sky is
it's not.
falling and it's going to hit us unless we do this, something to that
Yeah.
effect.
And someone's at fault. Yeah.
I think that's probably a big part of it. We need to figure out
Right.
who to blame for the state of affairs, be they
Sure.
good, be they bad.
Right. Yeah. That sounds about right.
So you're trying, and you are obviously making investment decisions, probably on a very
Sure.
consistent basis with, and when it's an international opportunity, Is that, I'm assuming it's harder because you have less information about it. So how do you, is it a criteria that you use, a framework for going through and say yes or no, I'm going to invest in this or I'm definitely not?
Sure. Yeah, we invest mostly in publicly listed companies. Believe it or not, there are over some hundred stock exchanges around the world. Almost every country that has a coastline has a stock exchange. And the other funny thing is that often these things are the companies listed usually have one of the big accountant firms as auditors, believe it or not. Now, auditors can get things wrong, but believing the data is not usually the harder part. It's understanding what the business dynamics are worth. If something's really profitable, it will encourage competition, whether that's in the United States or whether that's in Nigeria or some other place. So it's important to understand the competitive dynamics. And yeah, you have to understand the economic and political dynamics too. But I kind of compare this in the United States to someone that would say, I'm going to invest in a warehouse. I have two choices. One is maybe in Brooklyn, and one is in this area outside of Detroit. So you'd care about population growth, economic growth in the area, the regulatory regime, how the different regimes in the city are different. And now multiply that by two or three or something, but that's something similar to what I do too. So what's dry, is the area growing or not? If so, why not? Is it really well managed or not so well managed? And what bad things could happen? And are we getting, is the price that we have to pay to do that appropriate? It's not easy, but you can use a similar framework that would that you would use for evaluating kind of any investment anywhere.
Do you have secret sauce? Do you have something that you do better than others?
Well, the dirty secret is you can get up to speed on a country pretty quickly without being that smart. So the IMF publishes a thing called the Article 4 report on every country every year or two. And if you just Google Article IV and then the country, you can read a PDF about the country. I mean, we do a lot more than that, but if you're bored and you care about any country that you wrote a report about in third grade or something, type it in and it gives stuff like trade deficit or surplus as a portion of GDP, the situation with the currency, the fiscal deficit, debt levels. And that gets you pretty far. Of course, like a high debt level, like we find in the United States with over 100% debt to GDP. That's not great. And certainly lower debt levels would be better. If someone has a big trade deficit, you understand how do they finance it or why do they have a big trade deficit? And then it's kind of fun and somewhat challenging to find out who's in charge and why. Most countries have like a handful of families that have been controlling things for a long time. Americans kind of intuitively know this, but they often think this doesn't really exist here or it doesn't apply. But usually you have a whole bunch of families that have been doing something for a long time, and you have, it's helpful to understand what they're doing, who owns what and why, this bank, this construction company, this political party, and what agenda do they have or not have. And that provides some kind of a framework for thinking the relative riskiness of a place. It's kind of boring. I think the NYU professor Muturan has a pretty good framework for this, but the nerd gist is this won't surprise you. You need to have a higher return for a riskier place, right? I mean, the same would go for riskier parts of the United States. So that's abroad too.
And you have a vast amount of experience being having feet on the ground in I believe India and some other countries. So you're
Sure.
coming at this from the perspective of having done the face-to-face research on this, and now, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but not necessarily going to the home of all 100 other stock exchanges and being able to suss out a
Sure.
good opportunity.
That's right. I lived in India for a little less than 2 years. I worked for a big industrial company. It's kind of rare for you. Often you'll find people in my shoes, maybe that manage, say, Korean stocks, and they originally were from Korea. But it's pretty unusual for someone to go way outside of their comfort zone and then invest in something even separate to that. But that's been kind of fun for me. It was fun living there and doing something very different than growing up outside of suburban Baltimore. But certainly it was helpful being on the inside of a big company in a developing country with all kinds of lessons that apply to different places. I think now I'm in my 40s. I've been to a majority of the countries of the world. I don't remember exactly, but something like this. And if you don't count those little ones that have like 10,000 people or something, it's a lot. And that's fun. Yeah, it's fun having traveled to all kinds of places. It's fun being in a taxi or, I don't know, a brand new place and hear that someone's grandparents are from this country and then immediately knowing a good amount about that place. It's a neat way to, it's not what I expected when I was 10 years old, but it's a neat way to move around the world and interact with people in different places.
I can only imagine. That's a very, very cool experience. So you're talking, if you're talking to people who are investors, but maybe they're more comfortable with your traditional domestic kind of investment opportunities, what would you counsel them on or coach them on to open the aperture a little bit and look at opportunities in, I don't know what the term is. Emerging markets, just
Sure,
non-domestic.
something like that. The terms have sort of changed over time. So this is for informational purposes, compliance-wise, and I'm not an offer to buy or sell securities. So I'm not in the business of kind of knocking on doors and trying to get people to invest in this or that country. It usually wouldn't go well anyway. So people often will find me if they're interested in doing something beyond just let's call it the standard American way, typically. And that is for diversification purposes and trying to find something that is different, maybe a different style of currencies too. I will say I don't really advise everyone to just go out and invest abroad because there are a lot of landmines. Often there are big, kind of terrible, boring companies that are supported by a government that don't go anywhere that make up a big portion of the index. And it's not a great idea to invest in those. A lot of the big funds often, we're just a small little entity with three people, but a lot of the big funds, in my experience, own really boring stuff. That's not something you should just blindly go into. So I often, if I'm talking to younger people, I will often say, look, when you're on vacation, believe it or not, if you're going to an interesting place, chances are they have a stock exchange. Just go in and meet with one of the brokers and maybe meet with one of the banks just as a way to explore the world. Believe it or not, sometimes they are pretty good and pretty interesting. This is not investment advice, but it's kind of a way to think about the world. And you could say, I manage money for my family, which is never a lie because everyone has their own family. They always have something. And I always say this, but nobody ever takes up my advice because it's much more fun just to live on, exist on the beach. But who knows? I mean, maybe someone listening might say, yeah, I have a vacation plan to this place. I looked it up. They have a stock exchange. I'm going to meet with this broker. And I think if nothing else, it might make like a clever CV. Certainly would be interesting if someone wanted to interview with me, if they were to say, for the last 5 years, everywhere I've been going on vacation, I buy $500 worth of this and I have this interesting portfolio. This has gone well and this has gone poorly, and this is what I've learned. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's maybe not the answer you were looking for, but
No, I love it. I think
It's an
that that's,
it would be a different kind of CV, I think.
yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I'm sure that there will be somebody who will take you up on that. So if you are that somebody, please do report back to myself and Ryan and let me know how all that went. So I love it.
Yeah, it's
Well,
not the
Ryan,
worst.
That is a good one right there, but we're ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
Sure. Here's my I'd say difference-making tip would be something like, I think books are like the greatest deep value investment now. And when I go to the bookstore and look around, a lot of the books are very thin, flimsy things like how to optimize your life for this or that. And there are like many more of these from the last 10 or 20 years, like secrets to this and that. Like I'm fine with those, but my kind of tip would be backwards to go read something that's old, that's published before, I don't know, 2000, but maybe published before 1940 even. Almost anything that's like 200 to 500 pages, fiction, nonfiction, doesn't even matter. In my experience, not enough people do this. They think like that's a bygone world, but then inevitably when they read something from the ancient Greeks, I have a lot of people that end up saying, wow, that was a great tip. Like, that's pretty interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So it's not really what you would expect, but that's my
Well,
bit of advice.
I think that that is great stuff. That definitely gets, come on. Yep. Let's push that back to pre-1940, more than 200 pages. Doesn't really matter what. Like, that's awesome. I love it.
Great, great.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. Where can
Yeah,
people
thanks,
learn more
George.
about you? How can they engage with you?
Sure. So our website is, the firm is called Barca Capital. So our website is Barca, Barca Capital.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, and feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, or you can write us on our website, and it would be great to hear anyone. I always like talking to people about unusual data or interesting ideas, business ideas, book ideas, perspectives on different places in the world. Yeah, it'd be wonderful.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Ryan your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend that also appreciates good ideas. Go to barcacapital.com. It's Barca capital.com. Find them on LinkedIn as well. And as soon as you've completed your mission of investing $500 in all the companies that you go and visit, circle back with Ryan and we'll go from there. Thanks again, Ryan.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, George.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are, so act accordingly.